Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, it's an age-old thing, balancing creativity and comment, but it's all relative to this mindset issue. So to kick it off, what's a little bit of your background? I understand you did chemical engineering initially, and then how did you approach that side hustle, and when did you realize that you really wanted to create that freedom for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up such a good point about the commerce versus creativity conundrum. So I actually did my MBA at IE Business School in Madrid. I did a Fulbright scholarship. And so there I got exposed to business. I like to say that I'm a recovering engineer because I'm from four generations of analytical people and engineers, which is kind of applying math to solve real world problems. But I wanted a little bit more for myself and my life. So when I went to business school, I learned all about debt, leverage, business, leadership, all the principles of business. And that's when I knew I wanted to get back to the States and start building a real estate company. But to do that, you need money. I didn't have any. So I needed to work and build my savings. And I invested as much, I was doing even almost unhealthy things in terms of eating ramen and living in, you know, a friend's basement and things to really triple down on my goals. So that was what I did to build up my savings to then invest. And it just came back from a drive to want to succeed and achieve. And that's what inspired me to move forward with real estate.
Yeah, nice one. So were you doing like double the hours, really? This side hustle grind, you know, sometimes it's don't like to necessarily think of it as a grind. It's more like pursuing the things that you're passionate about in the time that you have. So how did you make the most of like time, or were you just literally like running into the ground?
It was when deals would come up, even if I was at work, I would need to take calls. So I would duck in conference rooms. So it was a blurry line, I'd say. So to a degree, I needed to do those things and get good results. But nights, weekends, my friend, and unfortunately I lost some friendships because my friends were out late on Fridays, you know, drinking, partying, doing these different things. And I was up early Saturday mornings, meeting with investors, touring properties in the area. And that's what my weekends were. I'd work on Saturdays and then take some time off Sundays to be with my girlfriend, now wife. But it was an all out hustle, for 10 years doing both. But it was rooted, it wasn't work, it was play for me. I saw real estate as my future and I was willing to invest in it. And it just, I needed to work my day job and do what I was really passionate about when I could.
That's a big one when you when your priorities have shifted and people around you are focused on other things and you've just got that drive to get up early and like get cracking on it. The deals you're talking about, so these are off market deals. So this is, but my understanding is this is properties that aren't advertised. It's kind of a word of mouth. That has been your focus.
That's right. So I hand wrote 600 letters to start and sent them to landlords in the area. I manually looked up their addresses. And when they would call me, I'd talk to them and see if they wanted to sell. These were not advertised properties. It was really creating opportunity that was there but hidden and tapping into that potential because it's something most people aren't doing. And I saw an opportunity to go direct to the seller and solve problems.
So it was more about establishing relationships by the sound of it. And yes. That's an awesome approach. And I mean, we're speaking about property, but I really think this could be applied to anything in a similar approach in terms of thinking outside the box a little bit and rather than going the traditional way that you might think, do what you've done and like go direct to the source. And it obviously, so that started to yield some results.
Well, that's right, because there are many people who they couldn't do the repairs because there was a resident issue, or maybe they didn't have the money to do them, or maybe they were behind on their taxes or mortgage, and they were looking for a solution. And I could provide a solution for them get them out of a situation or help them to manage their tenant situation or whatever it was and add value to them. But without them, you mentioned relationships and they really need to know, like, and trust the person that they're working with and feel that this person could solve the issue that I have. I'm going to give this a shot. So it does come down to the relationships and building trust.
Yeah. Trust is massive. So then you were able to transition into that more and more.
I was, and it was one house at a time. I mean, it wasn't an overnight success story. It was really one negotiation, one house at a time, one renovation. But the drive had to be there over a sustained amount of time. It wasn't something that was just an overnight thing and, oh, I'm just going to quit my job or do something else. I was side hustling for years.
Yeah, of course. And I imagine there was some call them fails as much as wins, that provided a whole heap of lessons, and you could pivot and recalibrate in a way, as you went through each process.
That's right. Oh yes. Oh, there's more failures than I could count. I mean, just, and it wasn't for lack of preparation. It was just I had read all the books, listened to all the podcasts on investing, and even with all the information, it still isn't enough just to have information. Experience and taking action and learning and iterating. You hear failing faster. It is true, while not taking yourself out of the game at the same time.
Did you always have a healthy mindset around money, or would you, like, from a young age, or did you have to develop that?
I did not have a healthy relationship with money growing up. And money was something that was lacking for my family. It was a source of, an obstacle to be overcome, not a tool to use. And so I grew up with many limiting beliefs about money, and it's neither here nor there. Lots of people inherit beliefs that they may or may not serve them. But in my case, money was lack. It was, we can't afford this, or we can't do that. And to an extent it was true because of the way we thought. So I had to rewire how I thought about wealth. And I spent many years doing that, to see it as potential opportunity. Money isn't something to be spent. It's something to be invested and grown. And it's really energy that can be used to create good or bad, but it's not something that is lacking or missing. It's something that can be grown and cultivated.
Mm. Yeah, it's a real shift from obstacle to tool.
Well, that's right. It's like money before, when I was younger, it was the seeds, but we ate the seeds, and now I'm planting the seeds. It's a different way of looking at the same seeds, but at the end of the day, they were just seeds. I chose to farm them, right?
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So for anybody who might still be in that, call it survival mindset, what's the initial thing? I mean, you obviously just like dug your way out of it and learn and were very driven, but for somebody who just can't seem to break that, what would you recommend?
Well, you have to start with your mindset, because I could say go out and take all these different actions, but you really have to start with how do I think and why? What's the root of why I think that way about money, wealth, and business? And there are limiting beliefs that we all have. It could be that, you know, money is evil, or, you know, rich people are greedy, or whatever it is. And I don't want to be greedy, so I'm not, you know, then you're sabotaging your own success. And so really rooting out what those reasons are that money is holding you back and you're holding yourself back, and then addressing those core issues, and rewiring your mindset. And it takes time. I practiced meditation, listening to scripts and trying to get my mindset fixed. Journaling is another tool, but start with the mind, and really identify for you why it is that you have that belief that's holding you back, because you can't jump to the next step without fixing the mindset first.
Property do you see it as a better investment, call it, than stocks?
Personally, I do. It's a much better investment, but and that's from 10 years of experience doing both. But it really comes down to the individual investor. Do they want an active business? Do they want to be project managing, owning real assets, and when they break, you have to fix them and other things? Or do you want the passivity of like an index fund and other things? I like the liquidity and passivity of some of the investments in the markets, but the only problem is I found over time that they can't compete with a business and with real estate ownership in terms of the rate of return that can be achieved. So you give up a lot of control and you give up a lot of growth potential when you invest in those instruments. And that might be good for some investors, but it wasn't good enough for me.
Mm. It's interesting. I've had experience living in two very different markets, which is Australia and Germany. I'm not sure how familiar you are with those rental and buying markets, but they're very, very different. So, you know, Australia, the property market is very high. Interest rates are very high. People are quite willing to take out loans and so on. Whereas here in Germany, it's a different mindset, and many people just rent because one, there's a different mindset around debt. The word in Germany for debt, I don't know if you speak any, I read you speak Spanish.
No German. I don't speak German.
Well, the word for debt is actually like schuldig, which is essentially shame.
Oh,
so
wow.
Which I just learned, and I was like, so there's actually like a cultural thing around sort of debt and shame, which I found really interesting. So people aren't so keen here to, I mean, obviously people do get help from the bank and everything, but it's a very different mindset, and the laws around rentals are really different as well, in terms of the tenants are very protected. Rents can't be raised so easily, and there's a lot of protection on the tenant and things like that. And also, I'm kind of going way off on a thing, but it's just my knowledge of these two different markets, I think is an interesting contrast. The other thing in Germany is, like, the first time I got an apartment here, the guy was like, if you don't give me a certain amount of money, I'm taking the kitchen with me. And I was like, what are you talking about? Am I just not understanding the German? And then he's like, and I'll take the floor. And so I had to, like, call my dad at home. I was like, this guy is saying he's going to take the kitchen and the floor. And I'm just in Melbourne. You can't put a scratch in the kitchen bench. But anyway, in Germany, in the rentals, you can put your own kitchen in, you can retrofit your own floor. And then when you move out, you can do a deal to sort of buy it off the previous owner. So, but I was in a complete spin because I'm like, in Australia, you can't even put, like, a mark in the wall. You lose your entire bond. Here it's like, you can just rip the entire kitchen out and take it with you. to finish it, this gives people renting more of a sense of kind of ownership, even though they're renting, because you can do what you want to the place. You can paint it, you can pull, you know, so it sort of does feel like you have more of an ownership. But the interest rates are low here as well. So that's a complete ramble I've got going on there. But I just thought that's my knowledge of these two markets. And I don't know what the question is within that. But it's, I guess, again, it just the kind of, like you say, the bread and butter of owning something and something that's tangible and that you can deal, like, I imagine you were out there initially fixing sinks and dealing with tenants issues, right? So
yes,
property, you can get your hands on it. That's to bring it home.
Well, that's right. And when I was in business school in Spain, we studied a lot of stocks and bonds, and they're quite intangible. And I respect the folks that can trade those things, and they do options and things, but it just wasn't for me. I'm more of a hands-on guy. I can point to something and say, I own that, but a lot of these paper and kind of digital assets, it wasn't for me. Besides the fact that real estate has historically done well here, it's a basic human need. Just getting too far away from basic human needs, I start to lose clarity, and really seeing what the purpose of this stock is. And I know it's ownership in a company that does something, but it's levels removed from, okay, how does this matter to people?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Yeah,
that's why I chose real estate.
Yeah, so that I get, that's really in line with your values, right? And establishing what your values, because it's fair enough to invest, but it's like, is this aligned with my kind of belief system?
Well, that's right. And I want to provide safe, affordable, functional housing for folks that are really fleeing some of these high cost areas. They're leaving New York, Philadelphia. I'm about an hour from Philadelphia, an hour and a half from New York City. And folks are really fleeing those areas. There's problems and there's affordability issues. And they're coming to the area that I live and they're looking for a better way of life. They're looking for housing that they're not looking to live in a 250 square foot apartment paying $4,000 a month rent. They're just not looking to do that. They're looking for amenities and additional services and more space to raise their family. So that's what we provide. And my wife and I, and we're happy to do that. We're the when people get fed up with their current living situation and move to our area for some of the amenities we have, we love providing that service.
That must be really satisfying, that helping people side of it. That's very different to just looking at, you know, the gain. It's the you know, the helping families aspect is awesome.
Well, yeah, because they're the customer, right? And it's a basic human need. We're providing a roof over a family's head. And so I can't think of a more basic need than that, other than, you know, food, water, you know, a couple other things. But we're providing an essential service. And so it's very gratifying. And aside from the fact that Billy Joel wrote a song about Allentown, where I'm from, about the urban decline and the decimation of the economy here. So it's a very famous song, and I was actually born there. So one of my life's missions is to reverse that song.
Reverse the song.
So Billy Joel, if you're listening, give me a call. We got to talk.
Reverse lyrics. Do a second iteration of the.
That's right. That's right. So love fixing things up, making things better, making communities, making spaces, and helping folks, get more for their money, right? And providing essential services. That's what I'm all about. And making my hometown a better place.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. I did hear back on the artist commerce thing, I did hear some successful filmmakers saying, you know, as an artist, perhaps live in the lower cost areas, like you're saying, to and strip things down. They weren't suggesting, you know, the kind of ramen noodles thing, but just like, how can I reduce the overheads to give a little bit of space while I build toward a, you know, a project or something else?
Oh yeah, that's what I really leveraged. And part of the mindset shift that I took was a place of lack to a place of opportunity with respect to wealth and money. However, it's not a flick of a light switch. There's a progression, there's a change, and keeping costs low for me was very important. It was essential. I worked a full-time job and I took all the proceeds and invested in my new business and side hustled for years. And I think there was virtue in that. I learned, in addition to learning skills in my full-time job that I could apply to the business, there was also the practicality of keeping costs under control. Using the difference to invest in real estate projects. So there was a lot of virtue in side hustling for me. Some entrepreneurs want to just burn the boats and go all in, but I took a more practical, calculated approach, which I think paid off just with the peace of mind and being able to build what I was passionate about while sustaining myself today. I could build the future and live today, right? Not choosing one or the other.
Yeah, with a very long-term game approach as opposed to short-term satisfaction or, I guess a heck of a lot of patience was involved.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, you have to see the future and have a vision, but we're still in the present and we're still living right now. So being able to take care of the financial needs today while seeing a vision for the future and then connecting the dots with how I'll get there is having that vision is what separates the entrepreneurs who might flounder and not accomplish things from those that really take off. But not just the vision, the practical step-by-step approach, if this, then that, if this, then that. Those that can piece those together will be very successful.
Did the chemical engineering feed into the new career in any way?
On a surface level, no. I wasn't, mixing, chemicals together and then all of a sudden making houses, right? Like I wasn't like 3D printing houses or anything like that. So on a surface level, no. What I learned was, so I was a mid-level manager at a big company and I learned leadership, the difference between leadership and management. I learned how systems and processes are important. I learned how critical people are to success. And so it wasn't like I was a builder or a contractor who then went into, it wasn't as a direct of a jump to real estate ownership, but the things that I learned, the principles were directly applied into my business. I learned how large, massive multinational corporations work. I learned how they stay in business for 100 years or more. And I could apply those principles to my business from day one while I was building it. So in that regard, I got best practices from world-class companies and applied them directly into my business.
Yeah, that's invaluable, right? And the people thing's huge. Like I've just been in a number of companies where I've seen sort of toxic cultures start to develop. And ultimately, it's just like companies end up losing good people. And whenever I've left a job, I've always said in my kind of farewell, this regardless of the industry, it's about the people. And it has frustrated me witnessing companies through various flaws in their structure or whatever it may be, just lose good people.
Mm. That was one of the earliest lessons I learned in my career was about people and their importance and retention, empowerment, and training. My first boss out of college, I was fresh out of engineering school. It was 2010, depths of the great financial crisis. He told me I was the worst employee he ever had and the company should fire me. And there were no processes. There were no instruction documents. It was, his management style was ignore, 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 slap, right? So it was just so bad. And, I learned quickly. Now it was a challenge for me because I had $50,000 of debt. I had no money. I had to pay that. So I did what I had to do. And I, the ironic part was that it was a career development program, right? So I was supposed to be learning and getting skills. And I, in a roundabout way, I learned some leadership lessons from but I learned from the very beginning how important it is to clearly define roles, put the right people with the right skill set in the right roles, and then coach them and train them so that they can succeed. I mean, the people are the biggest asset of any company, more than any software, more than any automation, any AI. Right? Because at the end of the day, we serve families and they have needs. And how we serve those customers is what keeps them happy and provides a better quality of life, or it tears them down. So, and it's the same with my employees. If they don't have their tools, they don't have training, they don't have clear instructions, and their personality type doesn't match with the role, they don't have what they need to succeed. And that's incumbent upon me as the CEO to make those matches work and provide those empowerment opportunities and training opportunities. So I learned from a young age about what can go wrong in leadership. And I'm trying to not do those things in my company. People are essential.
Exactly. But there's so much value in seeing things done in not necessarily the right way firsthand.
Yes.
I think regardless, it's just important that they're heard. People need to be heard. And again, just, seeing colleagues build up frustration and myself build up frustration and then just, quit without any chance of being heard is a big one.
Oh, and it comes back to trust. I mean, that's so important. I mean, the employees have to feel and know that their leader, manager, boss, that person has the employee's best interest at heart. Even if they have to have the difficult conversations, even if they need to go through change management and shift how processes are done. That trust is fundamental. It's foundational. Without trust, it's not possible to be an effective leader. There's exercises that we do in our company, and it's the little things of meeting people, having conversations, supporting them when they need help, providing instructions, clarity. And then the intangibles, breaking bread together, you know, meeting, getting face to face, getting out of offices, right? So, but trust is just so important for effective leadership.
Yeah, there's often a fear of speaking up, you know, when actually if you just put it on the table, like it can really benefit everyone, but it's often hard in those environments, you know, the level of fear of, oh, if I speak up, am I going to jeopardize the position? Or like you said, being willing to have these difficult conversations and be honest about stuff in a professional sense.
Well, right. And being vulnerable as well as a leader. I mean, I try to share from my own mistakes of, hey, when I was doing your role, I made this mistake and it cost me this deal, or I had this issue and I really messed up. And I think helping the team see that I'm a person too, I made these mistakes, it helps break down barriers. They can see, okay, Matt's a person, he's a human being just like me, he's being vulnerable, and it builds trust. I'm not some the leader incarnate who knows all the answers and never made any mistakes, right? So
yeah,
you're vulnerable.
Yeah, and it levels the playing field. Even though you're in a, call it a higher position, it brings a level of we're all in this together.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. If people feel valued, they will perform much better. You will have less turnover, and plus, it's just a better work environment. Even if people stay and they're not happy, that no one wants that for anyone else, right? So it's just a culture of collaboration, trust, encouragement.
Exactly. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some kind of challenge to listeners. It can be anything, given like our discussion or given your personal journey and experience. Is there anything that springs to mind, maybe particularly like we touched it, like directly to finance, or if there's something you feel that's more valuable in a general sense? Is there anything that springs to mind?
Sure. I would challenge listeners to really dig into their wealth mindset and how they manage their personal finances, because how you manage anything is how you manage everything. And I mean that with, it's very difficult for us to compartmentalize, well, I'm organized here, but not there, or I'm responsible here, but not there. So really dig into wealth mindset, personal finance, because you are a reflection of your business or of your side hustle. So get the little things right with respect to your finances and your mentality, and you'll get the big things right with respect to your dreams.
That's huge, man. That's a really, really, it's a big one. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, it's something that I do all the time, and I'm not the best at. I really have to poke at things, and why am I deficient in this area? Is there something that happened to me when I was younger, or is this just not a strength and I need to outsource this? Or should I try to improve this and really double down in this area to get better? But without that introspection, it's not possible to move forward.
You're right. It's like if somebody's has a kind of engine that can make them really organized in one area, but they can't seem to, why can't that shift be made to finances? And I guess that is a mindset thing. Like there's blocks, or there's, you know what I mean? The ability for somebody to be really organized on one thing, and then that just goes to the wayside.
That's right.
Perhaps thinking about, well, how, you know, and it's as you said at the start, you know, that the mindset around money being a tool and not an obstacle.
Well, that's right. And really digging into mindset, because there's a lot we won't get into it here, but there's a lot just on the neuroscience side and how the brain works that you can actually rewire how you think. It takes time and effort, but it starts with your why and what you want. And once you know that, I challenge everyone, identify what are the obstacles in my mentality first that are preventing me from getting the thing that I want. Work on those things, and then you will start taking different actions once you start with the mindset.
For sure. Where can people find you?
So my website is pisonproperties.com, and all of our social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, X, it's all Pison Properties.
Awesome. I really appreciate your time. Like I say, it just like, I think these things, even if you're not in the property game, I just think these principles are applicable to whatever it may be someone's trying to achieve, or the side thing they're trying to make the full thing. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, Daniel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.